Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. A little earlier today, we went down to the banks of the Charles River to meet Holly Hatton. She's a rowing coach at the Bear Hill Rowing Club in Harvard, Massachusetts. She'll also be competing in this weekend's Head of the Charles Regatta. But even more than that, Holly Hatton was once almost an Olympian. She was on the 1980 U.S. rowing team, the same team that never made it to the 80 games in Moscow because of a U.S. boycott following the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan. But Holly never gave up. She and her team have been racing in one form or another in the Head of the Charles just about every year for the past three decades. When we sat down with her at Water's Edge, just off Soldiers Field Road, we talked about why this regatta means so much to her, so many years after she was denied her shot at Olympic gold. So we're at Harvard's Newell Boathouse on the Charles River, and there are actually people rowing back and forth behind us, and looks like some crews are getting ready to go out too. But first of all, Holly, thank you so much for meeting us here and talking with us.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
I wonder if you might start by telling us when and why you first fell in love with rowing.
Oh my God, that's actually a funny story. I was went to college in Philadelphia, art school, Moore College of Art and Design. Had never done any sports before, but I love the Olympics. I mean, I watched it every 4 years, and always, you know, of course you have that Walter Mitty dream that could I ever be part of this. My very first job out of college, I worked with some women who actually rode on the Schuylkill and were members of a program called College Boat Club. They were looking to start a lightweight program. At that point, I was just a skinny little girl, and I thought, well, what? Why not? So I went down, and I realized probably very quickly, within the first 2 weeks, that I was truly not a physical masochist, because it was hard work. But they needed a coxswain for their for a race, and I jumped in the boat. I literally coxed a race. Probably I'd only been involved with it for like 2 weeks, and they told me everything to say. And I realized almost immediately that I was a mental masochist, and I could really love driving people to do their best.
Yeah.
And it just clicked for me. Why I connected to this very competitive process, I still don't know.
Well, I love how you put it, that perhaps it's in part because you were a mental masochist and fell in love with the mental challenge.
I did, yes. You know, if we want to put an analogy with football, you're the quarterback, and yeah. You're calling all the plays, you're doing all the motivation. I would say my very last year of coxing at a, you know, really full-time competitively was 1981, mm-hmm. And I didn't feel until 1980... that I was really good at it.
So even before 1980, in the years before 1980, you had committed your life to this, because I was reading that you were living in the Weld Boathouse across the river from here?
Yes, upstairs on the third floor. Me with the mice.
But you made the national team.
I made the team in 1977. I then went on to make it again in 1978. We won a silver medal in New Zealand. 79,
yeah,
bronze medal, and then made the Olympic team in 1980.
Now, of course, 1980 yes. is the Olympic Games that the United States chose to boycott
yep.
because it was held in Moscow and the Soviets had invaded Afghanistan.
Once the boycott was announced, a lot of athletes had to make a big decision as to whether they wanted to continue to go on or not. And the women that I was with, we had, you know, worked 4 years to get here, and we chose to stay with it, just hang in there, go through the whole process of being selected. I think there was also a belief that somewhere along the line this would be lifted. So we trained, we were selected. Nothing changed in that process. We were going, in our minds, to the Olympics, even though we weren't. And we did our whole race schedule, and the big warm-up was this race in Lucerne. It is probably the pinnacle of racing, other than the Olympics, is to race at the Lucerne Regatta. So the first day we're out there, and we're in the finals, and off we go, and we're right there with the East Germans, and we crossed the line 3/10 of a second or so in front of them. It was unbelievable, obviously unbelievable, just an amazing experience. Here we were, 4 weeks, I don't remember the exact times, before the Olympics, and we had now beaten the East German 8. Then, of course, it dawned on us that we weren't going to be, that was our only opportunity. Yeah. We went on to race in Amsterdam 2 weeks later. We set the course record, and that was our Olympics. We were done. I have to be honest with you, it was a very emotional time, very, very stressful. We were all just so angry at what was going on in the United States, and we're very vocal about it. This was a, I'll get a little political here, but this was a president that didn't have a foreign policy that needed to show it in order to get reelected. And he used, in my mind, the weakest group of people he could use. We had no lobbyists as an Olympic team. And the United States put a lot of pressure on the other countries to join in on this boycott because no one wanted to do it. And what did it gain? Nothing.
All of this context must have made that victory at the Lucerne Regatta just that much more bittersweet.
It did, because we knew we had the goods.
I mean, you beat the East Germans who went on to win the gold.
Yes, yes.
So let's talk about the head of the Charles, because it's been many, many years that you and the team, or versions of the team, have raced here.
Correct, yes.
What made you think that racing in the head of the Charles was going to be a way to partially make up for the loss of not having been in the Olympics?
I'm not sure it was ever thought of it that way, okay. Making up for something. I think it was anger. It was frustration. So what the head of the Charles allowed us is to come together as a club that we just formed, 1980 Rowing Club. So we would come here once a year. We'd jump into the boat. And the goal here was to just, in our own prideful way, I guess, is to continue to show we were that good. Strangely enough, you know, that we had to test ourselves. There was this unfinished business, and we were so angry and frustrated for many years. And honestly, if you were to speak to that group of women today and we started getting into the boycott, the voices would get a little tremulous. The people would get, it still hangs there. People are still very upset about it 30 years later. But it also has galvanized us. And this has typically been our meeting point. So I think it's just testing, you know, continuing to test.
Well, it's a pretty intense test.
Well,
I mean, this isn't just any race,
that's
right?
That's what we were doing when we were going to the Olympics. It was at the very highest level of testing. And so the head of the Charles puts us right back into the very highest level of testing.
I love your mental masochism is still there.
You know,
you're
it's
my kind
like,
of woman.
That triple type A. It's like give me a hard thing task to take on, and let me go for it.
Yeah.
You know,
Holly, I've just got to ask. I still hear your passion and the strength of your feeling about having been denied the opportunity to go to the 1980 Olympics. So given that, I mean, there have been some rumblings or some suggestions that because of Russia's current crackdown on the LGBT community there, for example, that some people are saying that the United States ought to boycott the upcoming Sochi Games.
Yes.
Do you think that that is still putting too much politics
in
the Olympic movement?
I do. And there are always going to be reasons not to hold the Olympics in a country because of their politics. I'm not minimizing the stand that certainly is in Russia right now because it's despicable. But just as I said with the invasion of Afghanistan, there are ways to go about this that would make a difference. And most of the athletes who go to the Olympics sacrifice an enormous amount to get there. If it would make a significant difference in the change of a policy, I guess we could talk about it. But I know it's not going to. I would rather see our athletes go, and if they are of that community, wear their rainbow ribbons on their uniforms. I'd rather see a protest like that to show we're here, we're competing, and we're proud, than to have a boycott.
Right. Well, last question. Since we are here at the boathouse and crews have been coming in and out of the water, and the head of the Charles is just a couple days away, so since I've got someone next to me who knows this river as well as anybody, what's your favorite part of the race here?
Oh, for sure, the Weeks Footbridge turn, because that's such a...
That crazy dog leg.
That crazy dog leg, yeah. Because if you do it right, you are sweating bullets. You're so close to the abutment of the bridge as you make the turn into it that you're inches away from crashing.
Yeah.
But when you do it right and you do it that close and you come out of there, you just want to go, wee! Yeah. I mean, I've had literally crews, you know, the rowers in the boat go, yeah! You know, and I'll be like, okay, I'm really close. You guys get ready. I might have to ask somebody to pull a blade in. Because you can go into that bridge a length down on a crew and come up a length up.
Yeah.
If you've done it right.
It's like a 120-degree turn,
it's
something
like that? Yes.
And you have to do that while going under the bridge as well.
Yes, while you're going under the bridge. While you have, on a typical day, you have a crosswind that catches your bow as you come out, which is driving you away from the direction you want to turn. And so all of those little factors go into challenging me, the metal masochist, to see if I can make it work one more time. You think you're going to have a heart attack. You're, you know, everything's just like so hyperventilating kind of thing. And then you just do your job.
Well, Holly Hatton, thank you so much for joining us here today on the river and for sharing your story. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thanks. It was a pleasure.
And have a great race this weekend.
Okay, we will. We'll give it a try. Thanks.
Holly Hatton was a member of the 1980 U.S. women's rowing team. She is now Bear Hill Rowing Club coach in Harvard, Massachusetts.